Hello, welcome, and thanks for listening to Carbon Climates, an energy podcast dedicated to discussing all things energy, carbon, and sustainability. We also like to point out what's getting hot, aside from our planet. I'm your host, Enya, and today I'm joined with a familiar face, my carbon climate and co-host, Ralph, who has been on the podcast before, discussing his job as a net zero engineer and his company, Catagen. Shout out to Catagen. So before we get on to today's topic, Ralph, how's your week been, and what have you been up to since you've last been on the podcast?
Yeah, it's good to be back, Enya. It's a really enjoyable first conversation. Glad to get into a second one, hopefully with as many puns as the last time too.
Definitely.
Since we last talked, my role at Catagen has changed slightly. So I was a net zero applications engineer, working across kind of all of our R&D. This year, I'm more focused on one sector that our technologies can be used in, and that sector is cement. So I'm now our cement lead for Climatech, which is our brand for our technologies. This week has been a bit mental, and for people who work with funding bodies, March, April is like crunch time for applications. So we've been working on a few non-dilutive grants, but also kind of applications for business model projects and subsidy support for a few things that we're developing in our project pipeline. And that's really to carry on from our R&D and pilot technology demonstrations. So it's to give you end-to-end solutions for our technology, operating in real projects in the real world, which is really exciting. And this week has been mostly focused around setting up action plans and kind of action logs for a lot of that stuff. And we've also just finished a piece of work for the Department for the Economy here on sustainable aviation fuel. And we're going to be presenting the findings of that 6-month project to them this week. So I've just been prepping the slideshow and making sure the written reports are all prepped and stuff for that. So it's been a bit of a fun week.
Yeah. So you haven't been busy at all. No, like that's
that's a pretty normal week for Catagen. We were 34 people the last time we talked. We're 67 now. So,
wow.
Yeah, the trajectory of growth that we're on is really, really exciting. But yeah, it does mean that like we've run out of desks for people currently. So we're expanding into new semi-permanent sustainable office space and stuff. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are quite surprised by how fast we move. But innovation by its nature is very rapid.
Yeah.
So it's a great kind of roller coaster to be on, but yeah, definitely moving at pace.
Well, okay. Well, here, I hope next time I speak, like, it's also like doubled in growth as well. You're like, we're at 200. Like, it's gone out of control. Yeah. But yeah, no, brilliant. Thanks, Ralph. Thanks for updating us. And listeners, you've probably guessed, since Ralph's back on the podcast, today's topic is going to revisit hydrogen and all its wonders. Okay, before we begin, Ralph, have you got any good hydrogen jokes, or are they too basic?
Well, hydrogen's actually acidic, not basic, but that's the first.
I need to leave now. I guess.
No, we tend to steer clear of puns like blow up and the bomb and stuff in work, because of hydrogen's past. But most of our puns now are based around things like our cement projects being set in stone, our aviation projects being pilots and getting off the ground, or our maritime projects sailing away off into the sunset. So it's more application specific rather than hydrogen specific now.
I was actually going to use a different intro as well. I was going to be like, okay, we're here today to talk more in depth about hydrogen and make light of the fact it's not actually really a heavy subject.
Yeah, that's good. I like that one.
Yeah,
but it's not a very dense subject either.
just keep on. I actually, I'm not going to lie, like, you know, Google is my ultimate source of like all the puns I find.
I think I am our ultimate source of puns in Catagen.
Yeah.
Much to our head of commercialization's chagrin. She's not a big fan of puns, and I make them constantly.
I actually, unrelated to energy, and hopefully everyone likes this as well, and you guys can use this as many times as you want. But why did the farmer call the horse Mayo?
I don't know.
Because mayonnaise.
Okay, that one was terrible.
Hey, you can keep it, tell your friends.
Hey's probably involved too, if it was.
Did the thing. Okay. That's okay, enough fun. Right. Well, thank you to Wikipedia, the most credible referencing source ever, for letting me know that there are colours I talked about last time to describe the different hydrogen types and sources. There's actually more.
Yeah.
So I talked about 3 or 4 main types, but there's actually 12 colours in total. So we talked about green last time, and green hydrogen is the most energy friendly form of hydrogen.
Yeah, so hydrogen as a rainbow was a really catchy title for kind of conferences and marketing events kind of over the last 18 months, because like we're visual creatures, a lot of us, and we like to be able to categorize things with color. I'm a big fan of color coding.
Mm-hmm.
Love a red, amber, green system. But generally we talk about grey hydrogen, blue hydrogen, and green hydrogen. And respectively, grey is hydrogen that's sourced from natural gas through a process called steam methane reforming, which is a chemical reaction that breaks the carbon and the hydrogen in methane apart. But obviously that produces a lot of carbon dioxide, so not as sustainable as it can be. Blue hydrogen, on the other hand, is the production of hydrogen from carbon-containing materials like natural gas. But you capture the CO2 using carbon capture technology.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be aiming scrubbing or passive capture technologies that use different absorbents. And that's something that the UK government's investing heavily in as part of the hydrogen strategy for the UK. To complement the carbon capture capacity that's being developed in parts of England and Scotland. And then green hydrogen, as you said, is probably the holy grail of hydrogen for energy, because it doesn't have any carbon associated with it. So you're taking water, which is H2O, so two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom, and you're using energy to pull them apart, make a hydrogen gas and make oxygen. And that's really where a lot of hydrogen technology is aiming to get to. So it's the one that we hear a lot about, but it's really hard. Water is a really stable molecule. That's why kettles take so much electricity to heat it up. That's why we use it to store energy or in the form of heat, and why we use it for a lot of things, because it doesn't really like to react with a lot of stuff.
Okay. That's very informative, Ralph. Thank you very much. I thought of a pun while you were talking. So you could say blue hydrogen, they use carbon capture technology. So you could say the UK is capturing their moment, or
yeah.
Okay, it wasn't my strongest pun. I'll take it back. I'll work on it. I'll get it back to you.
Some of the other colors that are really interesting at the minute, and are being more focused on, there's an increasing movement to differentiate the renewable energy sources. So green hydrogen is any renewable electricity, and that can be wind or solar PV, even things like hydro, though some people query how environmentally friendly hydroelectric power is because of its impact for damming and use of land and things like that.
Yeah.
But increasingly we're seeing things like yellow hydrogen, which is production from solar thermal or solar PV, being split off into a separate category from wind, for instance.
Yeah. I like the sound of yellow, because I just gave a lecture on PV. So yeah, I'm all about PV.
But really interestingly, in this space at the minute, there's a lot of exploration using the knowledge that the oil and gas sector has to find naturally occurring pockets of hydrogen gas and hydrogen containing geology in the ground. And that's white hydrogen. So that's naturally occurring hydrogen. It was thought for a long time that because it's so light, that hydrogen basically accelerates at the speed of gravity out of our atmosphere. So you don't find it in the air we breathe. Really, but there's actually more hydrogen being found than we thought there would have been in the ground, and so it's being looked at as an interesting way to increase the uptake of hydrogen in places where there is geological stores of hydrogen, and that complements some of the activities looking at storing hydrogen in geological features such as salt caverns, which if anybody is from kind of the green Green Island area, yeah, near Larne. There is a couple of plans at the minute to look at using the salt caverns there for storage of gases. Little bit contentious in the spicy issue. A lot of people don't want to be living on top of large volumes of hydrogen, understandably. So we need to, there needs to be a little bit of policy and social involvement there. But it's fitting that hydrogen has lots of different colors, because it's going to take lots of different solutions to solve and unpick carbon from our energy system. Mm-hmm. So having lots of different ways to generate it and use it is an important part of resilience in any energy system. So it's great that they're being looked at and investigated. One of the other ones of interest for the UK and Europe is pink hydrogen, particularly in France, which is generated from nuclear energy. And that can be quite complementary with nuclear power because it uses the heat that's rejected from that system to generate hydrogen. And because you're already heating water anyway, that water is already at a temperature that makes it more energy favorable to turn it into hydrogen through a process called thermochemical splitting, which is where you use heat to break apart hydrogen and oxygen bonds rather than electricity, which is what electrolysis is.
Okay, so it's kind of doing two processes with one.
And I think as we've seen over the last 3 to 4 years that technology has developed at a pace that is creating the complex interconnections that we see in things like combined heat and power and cogeneration and trigeneration systems that we already have for established fossil fuel based energy systems. And we're starting to see those same complex synergistic energy setups and new technology that's emerging. I think that's where it needs to get to be competitive. If you think about oil and gas as a sector, you know, there aren't companies that just make one oil and gas product. They make a whole range of them. And that economy of scale is really important for any kind of commercial offering. And there's been a movement and a maturity of thought that if we're going to replace these products, we can't have one technology that makes pharmaceutical oil-based products, and we can't have one technology that makes fuels, and we can't have another technology that makes resins and glues. There has to be a technology that benefits from doing very similar stuff to make different products all at the same time, and that's something that we've been developing for a while.
Very good. Can you tell me a bit more about Catagen? So all the use, because funny story, you were there, so it's not really funny, but like, that sounded like a burn. It really didn't mean to. Okay. What I mean is, you work for Catagen.
Yeah.
I myself have been to Catagen before on an Energy Institute site tour. Shout out to Energy Institute. And yeah, like, we're able to see all around the plant.
Yep.
You're able to show us how your technology works. And then you also give a very interesting talk about transport of hydrogen as well.
Yeah.
And just like what you guys are focusing on.
Yeah, so the facility in Belfast is where we do our R&D work. Currently there is 5 of our Climatech pieces of technology in there. There's also our green emissions testing machines as well, which is how we test catalysts for industrial uses and things like the automotive sector, which is a whole different topic. So we'll cover that maybe in another episode someday. But we went around the facility, I think this time last year, roughly. And we really like to engage with people like the EIC and other bodies like that, because it's Energy Institute. Sorry, you're not the council. It's really important to us to show people what we can do, because the way that we think about energy systems is more aligned to somebody like yourself who's looking at a full system assessment. A lot of technology developers are looking at single technological solutions to a very specific problem, or they're not worried about application or problems at all in some cases. And we've identified that to unpick and unravel an existing incumbent energy system, you have to consider all of those different variables and create a system that's able to deal with that. And that's why we've developed 2 technologies that generate hydrogen. One of them is a thermochemical water splitting process. So that's kind of what we talked about with green hydrogen. And the other uses organic waste streams. So that's sustainable sources of waste that are overlooked and underutilized to free hydrogen from those and generate biogenic CO2. So those are really, really interesting technologies, and there's lots of uses for them and lots of benefits to using them. But generating hydrogen is only part of the problem for energy systems, and you have to be able to compress it and store it. So we've developed our own compression technology as well, which allows you to compress and dispense hydrogen more efficiently than current technologies. And there's lots of interest in that tech at the minute, and there'll probably be a wee bit more information about it by the time this goes live.
Okay.
And hydrogen is great for lots of applications. So we're looking at things like heavy industry, where you have really high temperatures and really large energy consumption. So cement sector, steel, glass, those really important building materials that we are going to need in a net zero world and have to be made in a decarbonized fashion. But things like mobility have hydrogen uses. We don't have many hydrogen vehicles in Europe as of yet. Japan's probably the leading place in the world for that. They do a lot of hydrogen work for hydrogen fuel cell cars. So some people may have seen the Toyota Mira, which is a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle. If you're ever in London, in the City of London, the City of London Police have their full fleet is hydrogen powered. So keep an eye out for that if you happen to be in and around there. But really, if you're thinking Northern Ireland, Wrightbus is probably the people think of for hydrogen buses. So TransLink have 12 hydrogen buses currently on the market, and they're designed to reduce emissions, but also to reduce pollutant emissions. So you're not just looking at CO2.
I think I've seen on LinkedIn, you guys went down to visit Wrightbus recently, didn't you?
So we have a project at the minute called High Density, HY Density, so another pun there for you, where we're working with Wrightbus and a quarrying and mining technologies company called Terex, who have a base in the west of Northern Ireland, near Dungannon, to develop a dual fuel system that runs on hydrogen with e-diesel as a backup. And e-diesel, for those of you that are not familiar with that term, is a type of e-fuel or electrofuel or synthetic fuel, depending on your flavor of the month, which is a liquid hydrocarbon. So hydrogen carbon chains, same as you get from oil and gas.
Yeah.
But it's produced by combining hydrogen gases, preferably from something like a green hydrogen generator, and CO2 captured from what's called the fast carbon cycle, which is available carbon in the atmosphere, in the soil, in plants, on the Earth's surface, rather than geologically stored in the form of oil, gas, and coal. And combining that hydrogen and that carbon to make those hydrocarbons using renewable electricity to stitch them together. And that means that you can create diesels and petrols and kerosene molecules that are not originating from a fossil carbon source. So they don't contribute CO2 emissions, so they don't unlock carbon from the ground and put it into the atmosphere. They use carbon that's already in the atmosphere ultimately as the source of that carbon, and that's really critical in differentiating between those two types of fuel, because there are things like air travel that are very difficult to electrify because the energy density you get from something like a lithium-ion battery currently is not sufficient to allow you to transport people through the air, and the kind of energy density journey that people go on is they go, can we electrify it, because we are lucky to have lots of renewable electricity in this part of the world, so that's usually the best and most efficient use of energy, because if we generate electricity at source, we want to use it as electricity. And if that's not suitable, hydrogen is probably the next best thing to look at. It's a very simple molecule. You can make it from breaking apart other things. Okay. So generally destroying things takes less energy than creating them. So you can look at hydrogen for things that need a little bit more oomph. So like buses or trains, you can supply them with compressed hydrogen, and that allows you to get a higher level of energy density. So you're not having to give up as much volume on say a bus for battery banks, because you've got a smaller tank of hydrogen that stores that energy. And then if that's not suitable, which it isn't for things like very large aircraft that are flying maybe across the Atlantic or between the Middle East and Southeast Asia or Australia, you're really topping out what you can do with hydrogen at that point. Currently, now Airbus and Boeing and others are developing technologies to that are lighter aircraft that have more space to store hydrogen and things like that. But currently, if you buy an Airbus commercial airliner right now, and you want to fuel that for the next 30 or 40 years, because that's how long the lifetime of that asset is, you need a solution that's compatible with a 2050 net zero world, and e-fuels are the only way you can do that. So they're a really important part of that kind of final unlocking of fully decarbonized energy. And I don't think anybody wants a world where we're not able to fly to see loved ones and experience different cultures and things like that. So we have to find a way to do that that's economical, but also doesn't result in us not being able to fly, because it is an important part of kind of the global ecosystem.
Okay, brilliant. Very, very informative, Ralph, very informative. But the thing I was going to say about Wrightbus, when I seen the photo of Qatar Gem and then Wrightbus, the Wrightbus representative was someone I went to secondary school with.
Oh, fantastic.
He's a lovely lad, Ryan. Shout out, Ryan.
Ireland and Northern Ireland specifically are a very small place. And I think as a region, we undersell our capabilities. Like, we have a lot of very well-educated and very driven young people and engineers and scientists and artists. I think we have a resilience and stubbornness here to do things. And that's why you see companies like Wrightbus leading the way kind of in the world in this space. And you know, we have a very well developed aerospace industry, cybersecurity industry, software industry. So I'm not surprised that you've come across other people from your previous life who are now working at the kind of the cutting edge of technology, because you know, we see that all the time. And we're really lucky to have a company that is able to benefit from that culture of real innovation and expertise and want to do things differently. Because looking at problems from different angles is really important in the engineering world, because a lot of the solutions that we've come up with are really elegant solutions to problems that other people haven't thought about. And it's one of those things where we kind of sit down and brainstormed a couple of these technologies. And when we actually looked at what we've done, we went, oh, well, of course you'd do it that way. And then we went, why didn't nobody think of this before? And that's when you know you have a really good, innovative idea, because you would never, having seen it, the solution to the problem, you would never do it any other way. And that's how you know you're onto a winning technology.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Ralph, for giving us that like insight like that we wouldn't have known. So yeah, it's like the inside scoop and everything you're given. So I've talked before about energy strategies on this podcast. I say that the episode itself hasn't been released, but it has been recorded. So and then by the time this comes out, it'll have been released by weeks. So energy strategies and how they're all over the UK. Northern Ireland has its first one. So did you know the UK has its own hydrogen strategy, which I'm sure you didn't, the fact that you're in the hydrogen industry, but that was published in 2021?
Yes. So Kwasi Kwarteng, who was the head of the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, which it was known as at the time, and quite like Prince, it is now known as the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero, and has had a rebrand. But he released a document in 2021, which outlined a very ambitious strategy for the UK in terms of hydrogen. Part of that was 10 gigawatts of hydrogen generation capacity. So GW, not MW, which is what we hear a lot of for wind. For kind of reference, the largest offshore, the four largest offshore wind farms in the world are in the UK. And they collectively produce 2 gigawatts of electricity. So this was a really important signal to companies like ourselves that the UK was going to be the place to develop hydrogen technology in Europe and in the world for the next 5 years. And that strategy has been updated in the last couple of years. Obviously, we've had a couple of personnel changes in UK government, and that always comes with rewording and amendments and things like that. And that strategy has actually been amended and added to, and now not just subsidy support is being provided through grant funding for technology development like ourselves. And we've been very fortunate and very lucky to be supported by the UK government with some of our project development. But the strategy has developed to the point now where they are doing competitive allocation rounds for hydrogen delivery for uses. So that's things like steelworks and power generation facilities are now actively pitching projects based on a price of hydrogen that they can generate those at using renewable electricity. And that's a really important commercial metric to enable an industry to grow. And it results in really positive results, particularly in the renewable sector, where this was how the wind, offshore wind sector in the UK first started. So the UK government's trying to replicate a lot of the good from the offshore wind and onshore wind policies over the last decade and replicate that with hydrogen. It has been very successful in a lot of ways.
I wonder, does the strategy, because it was a like 90-page document, but like I wonder if it has, you were saying there about the gigawatts of energy,
yes.
It is able to, like, you know, it has potential to unlock, but I wonder if there's like a diagram or a visual equivalent being like, this is so and so many wind turbines, or this is so and so many solar panels, or this is like so and so many biomass boilers.
So that's a lot of what my job at Cadigit is. So I do a lot of work with our stakeholders, potential project partners and collaborators, and I have to help them try and visualize their own energy consumption a lot of the time. So if we take Heathrow Airport as an example, and let's say we decide to go to 100% sustainable e-jet fuel, like as an e-fuel that we talked about earlier, the amount of energy that the systems to generate that fuel would require is the amount of offshore wind that the UK will have by 2025. All of the offshore wind capacity in the UK to decarbonize one airport. And that's probably pushing it in terms of its capability. So we don't really appreciate how much energy stored in things like petrol, home heating oil, diesel. There's a reason why we use them for fuels, because they're really energy dense, and trying to decarbonize that's a really big challenge. And that's why it's really important that we deal with a couple of issues with particularly wind and solar, which is intermittency of power supply. Obviously, if the sun's not out, your solar panels are not going to be generating electricity. And if there's no wind, your wind turbines aren't going to be generating electricity. So we need to have technologies that can work with that problem to maximize their energy production.
I think one of the energy government, like, you know, head department people, maybe this is back in 2017, but then when they were talking about renewables and solar panels and wind turbines, they actually said sure, the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine, but that was someone in the Department of Energy or in the energy department in the government.uk. Now I will say this, having previously worked in the solar panel industry, like solar panels are still, they're not able to generate the full energy that they can get from the sun shining, but they're able to pick up some reflection from the likes of the clouds, and so they still do generate some, but maybe not as much.
But the issue with current technology, everything that we use to generate chemicals relies on steady state power. So I know I'm going to get X amount of electrons coming in my front end that I'll gobble up and turn into chemicals. That's not what happens with modern renewable electricity. Unless you've something like a hydro dam, or you've got tidal or wave generation devices, but even they have fluctuations in power output. And one of the things that we're doing at Cadigit is we're making systems that are much more tolerable of that power fluctuation, because our technology originally was designed to replicate engine outputs. So it inherently has a level of variability that it tolerates. And that means that as wind picks up, we're able to ramp our production of hydrogen and e-fuels up to fully utilize all that energy. And as it starts to calm down, or we get towards kind of evening, if we're using solar power, it can ramp the system right back down And what that means is you get what's called a higher utilization factor of your renewable energy. Essentially, you're able to lock up more useful outputs from those systems. And that means, one, they're more efficient, which is always going to be more sustainable. And two, the commercial offering that they represent is better because you're not wasting any of that electricity that you generate. So you're getting a better return on investment of your machine. And that's a really important aspect for commercial deployment of these technologies because we have to create a business model that pays for itself, you know, and we are a company whose mission is to clean and decarbonize the air. There's lots of other energy companies that are out there to make as much money as possible, but we are a commercial company, so at the end of the day, we have to sell stuff that makes money. So that we have to be cognizant of that, and that's one of the really exciting things about our tech is it aligns those two things that quite often divert in modern life, where we're creating a more efficient energy system by increasing our utilization factor of intermittent wind and solar, which is giving you a better commercial offering. So you're actually getting the best of both worlds out of it. That means that, you know, the UK's investment in wind is better used, which means that for all of us that pay tax or live in the UK, we're getting a better value out of that system.
Very well, Ralph, like, honestly, just like, come on, spout out what you know, and then we're all the wiser, like, from it. So what I say from the hydrogen strategy, the energy security secretary, well, at the time of the word, Claire Coutinho, I have butchered her last name, I apologize, for someone whose name is continually mispronounced. I'm so sorry. I can't believe I did that. I will find out that correct spelling, and I'll make a reference to it in the bio. But she said hydrogen presents a massive economic opportunity for the UK, unlocking over 12,000 jobs and up to 11 billion of investment by 2030. Now, she said this in 2021, so it is definitely updated since
It's
then.
probably more, honestly. The rate of interest in aggressive decarbonisation has increased, if anything, since this document came out. And hydrogen's a really important part of energy security for the UK and Northern Ireland specifically, because we're really fortunate to have lots of renewable energy potential. So as a region, both the UK and Northern Ireland in particular import a lot of our energy. So two-thirds of our energy demand in Northern Ireland is liquid fuel based, and we don't have any natural oil and gas in large amounts. So we import that from places like Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Some of that oil comes from as far away as the Middle East, and some of it comes from the USA. And if we can develop indigenous technologies like we're doing that can capture that electricity and turn it into hydrogen, which can then be used to as an alternative to things like high heat applications where you've got coal or natural gas, like cement manufacture, which is a really important export for the island of Ireland, which a lot of people don't know. Or we can turn that hydrogen with carbon from the air into diesel and kerosene, which are the main hydrocarbons you use for things like home heating oil and driving vehicles. We can become much more energy independent. And that means that we're essentially turning our natural resources into sustainable and useful products for our local use. And that insulates us from things like price fluctuations in the global oil and gas market and supply issues, which can be a real problem for particularly carbon dioxide into Northern Ireland. There are lots of industries like the food industry, the agricultural industry, and the packaging industry that use carbon dioxide as a chemical. So if you ever open any packed meat, if you have eaten any vertically farmed food, which is becoming more and more common, if you've ever drank a beer, if you've ever drank a bottle of well-known soft drink that's bottled in Lisburn from a very large beverage manufacturer, all that CO2 has been imported into Northern Ireland, and it's ultimately come from natural gas. So there are lots of things that we can do with that energy, and technology like ours and climate tech allows you to turn it into the energy vectors that can't be electrified. And that's a really important part of energy network resilience. And that's why hydrogen is a really important part of the energy security strategy for the UK as a whole.
Wow. Okay. I think that's a good, that's a good sentence to wrap up, like, you know, the knowledge base part of the podcast. Like, okay, guys, like, you know, better just digest that, because yeah, that was a lot. Even like, what is it? I had a script, of course, but like the mind I've just learned, like, no, I'm still processing.
I find this a lot whenever we start talking about what we're doing at Climatech. It covers so many different aspects of modern life. And that's indicative of the fact that we have such a complex and diverse energy system that exists. The problem with that system is it's currently underpinned by fossil carbon that's damaging the planet. And that energy system, in large part, can maintain and exist the way it is. Yeah. It's just that the carbon that's in that system needs to be sourced more sustainably. And that's what we're really interested and keen to do, is create a equally diverse, equally resilient, and more sustainable energy system that's not dependent on oil and gas products. And I think it's going to be a much more successful way to look at energy than we need to make lots of hydrogen because it's good, which is where, whenever this strategy document first came out, a lot of thinking was. The conversation in the space has moved on and it's become much more mature, and I think it's leading to better results. And I'm biased because we're developing the technology, but going to be better for consumers long term, and that's what you want.
Okay, yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you very much. You've been really great to have on, but you're not done just yet, because what is it time for? People, it is time for the hydrogen round, so also known as the question round. So I've got some questions I'm going to ask you about hydrogen.
Yeah.
Some of them are hard. Some of them you're probably going to know. And then the last one I'm going to ask you, it is quite tricky. But I've got a feeling you might get it right away.
We'll see.
Okay. So could you tell me the date of which hydrogen production was first recorded?
Can't tell you the date. It was in the 19th century and it was called inflammable gas. And it was developed by an English chemist who was called Charles. Oh, no, that's as far as I'm going to get.
So, yes, you'd be correct in, like, what is it? They're the ones who said about it being a gas. However, in 1783, Anton Lavoisier and Pierre Laplace.
Laplace. My engineering background, I should have got that, definitely.
But they measured the heat of combustion of hydrogen using an ice calorimeter, because everyone, ice kilometer, there we go, I just did it, ice kilometer, because everyone has one of those.
So the gas battery is what I was thinking of, which was the first of the first generation of hydrogen using an electrochemical cell, and that was in 1848.
See, I was going back to the first. When was it observed? Yeah. So actually the first, like, apparently the first recorded observation was in 1520.
Oh yeah, there's lots of contention around who discovered gases. Chemists are very territorial.
But I didn't realise it was such a... Nope, I'm trying to think of a pun offhand and I can't.
Volatile subject.
So, damn it. I'm just gonna move on. Okay, I've got this question for you. And listeners, stick with me. I'm gonna explain that if you watch it, you probably get it. Can you tell me the cat's owner who solved the equation for hydrogen for him?
No. This isn't cats and science, immediately go to Schrodinger, but he's a physicist.
What is it? No cats and science, but like, what did you say? What was the name you just said?
Schrodinger.
It's very interesting you say that, because the Schrodinger equation is exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's a mathematical formula that describes the quantum state of a system and how it changes over time. and it's used to calculate possible energy levels, and it works on the wave functions of an atom. And apparently dancer just continually changes because the waves moves at the waves move, but for hydrogen it's perfect.
Yes,
because there's a proton and electron, like, you know, and you can tell exactly where they are.
So in hydrogen there's only one valence state, which is the term that Schrodinger was describing, and that means that it's a really useful gas for things like calibrating and measuring other things, which is what it was traditionally used for a lot in science. I did realize it was Schrodinger who developed that, though. That's a good one for me. That's a that's a new one. I told you I wouldn't know them all.
So apparently, apparently he developed this equation, and then it, like, you know, there's no correct answer apart from hydrogen. Like, hydrogen is the only correct, like, you know, it's the called the hydrogen problem or something.
Oh, I'd have to bring that back to Catagen.
Oh, don't,
it's the perfect solution.
They will absolutely rick you. I'm like, you got it from her? Okay, sure. But yeah, okay, so you know what? I'm pretty proud I explained that in this podcast. Not explained it, but was able to converse with you about it in this podcast, because it's quantum mechanics, and I don't mess with that.
I don't mess with that either. Yeah, my brother's a computer scientist, and he does a lot of qubit processing and things like that, and that's well beyond the realms of my brain.
Is this the brother I met at your party?
Yes.
How's he doing?
He's doing well, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, he's currently looking for a job in AI, so he helps develop language scripts for AI, and that's his kind of day job.
Wow.
So he teaches machine learning, essentially, how to translate to base languages, either human languages or coding languages. So anytime you talk to, like, Google Assistant or your Amazon Alexa, he helps develop those scripts that, if you say speak in French, allow it to figure out what you've said, translate it into both English and then its base coding language, and then do that in reverse to talk to you in your native language.
I'm always amazed at people who can do that, the likes of scripts, because I almost, like, you know, I almost had an argument of Excel today, like, trying to create, like, one of those, you know, the Visual Basic VBA scripts. I pretty much wanted to, I had like 300 rows, and I wanted to create a script that I'm, like, able to put all these rows into a single PDF, like, you know, each row had its own page. And I've just, you know, I couldn't do it, Captain. I couldn't do it. Okay, so Enya moved on to something else. That's enough about me. Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, that's the end of question round. I did have more, but, like, I feel like two is enough.
Let's go for another one. Let's see.
Okay, I'm bluffing. I didn't have, like, you know, any more.
I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
So, hydrogen as a gas is probably one of the simplest molecules you can make. Where is the most hydrogen found in the universe?
Ah, it's on a planet, isn't it?
No.
Hold on, is it not everywhere?
Yes. Yeah. So hydrogen is actually the most abundant state of matter in the universe. Because it's so light, we don't find it on planets. Because the gravitational pull of them pulls it away. But actually, hydrogen's the most abundant substance in the known universe, which is really interesting because it's very volatile. It blows up very easily. But it shows how it underpins everything in modern life. So we often think about carbon being the basis for, like, organic life, which is a fair assumption. But actually, hydrogen is nearly ubiquitous in everything we do, which is the cruel irony of why it's so difficult to generate sustainably.
So we're all hydrogen?
In some ways, we're all hydrogen, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that, so thank you. I'm going to take that bit of information and tell someone else it tomorrow. I'll just be sitting there, it's like, hey, do you know we're all hydrogen? And they'll be like, get back to work, aren't you? I'm like, yep, no, that's fair. Okay, well, brilliant. Okay, that is the official end of the question round now. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for answering my questions. Okay, well, Rob, you've been brilliant to have on. Before I let you go, I just want one final question I'm gonna ask you. Do you have any advice for future graduates looking to get into the energy hydrogen industry. And yes, I did ask you this last time on your first podcast, but that was 8 months ago. Yeah. So I want to know if your advice has changed.
We're still hiring. So if you have experience or you want to come and work for a really cool company that's making really cool tech, please get in contact with us. It's Ralph at Catagen, very easy to remember. The advice I would have is this space is becoming so big and so heavily invested in. There's lots of opportunities, but the important thing is to find out in the space what interests you. There's lots of things you can do. And some people will say, be a renewables engineer. Put up big wind turbines, develop projects. Some people want to make really cool electrolyzers or fuel cell stacks. This area is going to permeate through all aspects of modern life, because everything that we do, from clothing and fashion to food to transport, is going to be decarbonized over the next 30 years. So even if you are passionate about fashion design, there is a space for you and your skill set in hydrogen and renewables in general. Really what's more important is awareness and understanding of how you fit into that solution.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need lots and lots of different skill sets to solve this problem, and they're not all engineers. A lot of the work I do is with people who have software backgrounds, marketing backgrounds, accountancy backgrounds, because we have to completely change the entire societal perspective on energy, and that requires everybody, from the people who know how to make the generation equipment to people who know how to market
mm-hmm.
energy and policy. So it's really more about being a motivated and actively enthusiastic participant than any specific skill set. And listening to things like this podcast are a great way to start that.
You said that last time as well. I remember that. Like, thank you. Thanks for saying that. Like, that's good. Speaking of marketing, I know the date this is filmed, it's coming up to like International Women's Day.
Yeah.
And I've already got the tagline I'm going to put out. I actually, you know what, I'll say this and I probably won't put it out because it is a bit cheesy, okay? But I'm like putting the energy in energy.
Yeah.
Or putting the energy in energy. Yeah. Like it's one of those.
We're really fortunate at Catagen to have an unusually high proportion of female employees, and mm-hmm. that's right through up to C-level in the company. We think it's one of our real key strengths, because the more people you bring from diverse backgrounds, different experiences and different perspectives, the faster you get to the best answer. And I'm really fortunate to work with and for some really, really cool people who happen to be women. And I think that's a really important opportunity. And it's important to publicize it and make it visual and make it observable. There's a lot of our best engineers and some of our other aspects, marketing, accountancy, and logistics, are female engineers or female scientists. And it's really important that they have space to talk about that and be visible for women who mightn't consider roles in that area. And it's something I'm very passionate about. I actually work with a women's sports team, so it's something I've always tried to do in my personal life, and it's a really important thing for everybody to be involved in.
Yes, you work for Harlequins, don't you?
Yeah, so I'm the head coach for the women's rugby team at Harlequins here in Belfast, and it's a great responsibility and a great honour to work with like such a great big family of female sports people. But it's really hammered home to me the seeing is believing, and kind of having to talk your talk, because I've seen lots of companies that do hire lots of female employees, but there's a glass ceiling, and I'm sure there's many more educated people to talk about it than me. But at Catagen, we're really fortunate to have a really diverse and well-mixed balance, and it's something that we're working really hard on to keep going in the right direction, because unfortunately the engineering space as a whole is very bad at equal representation, particularly for female engineers, and it's something that we'll all benefit from having more of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to be part of that and to help contribute positively to that, but it's always great to have International Women's Day on Mother's Day as well, because it's double the excuse to spoil your mum.
I've already got a present.
So my mum is I'm not gonna say her age, I'll keep her dignity. But she like has just taken to the time where she is in her life that she only drinks champagne.
Oh,
Like
yeah, lovely.
only drinks champagne. So I've got her some champagne flutes
Oh, that's
for
lovely.
Mother's
Yeah.
Day. Hopefully they won't end up smashed, like, but we'll see.
That depends how much fun you have.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it is. It's a good place to work, and I think what I really enjoy about International Women's Day, and as a supporter of it for a long time, even in my past roles, is it's a great opportunity to just talk about how great everybody is. And I think that's generally what happens, is it's a very safe space for people to talk about what they love to do. It's never a negative event, which is always good.
No, that's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again. You have been very informative, and yeah, we all look forward to hearing you. You'll be back on in the future, I'm sure.
Oh, I hope so, yeah.
Yeah,
Hopefully, I'll know more of
definitely.
the hydrogen questions next time.
Yeah, no, next time they'll be harder. Like, okay. So up your game. But no, looking forward to hearing in the future what else Catagen has been up to. And I'm sure also in the next 8 months, there will be further developments with hydrogen.
Yeah, hopefully. Our mission is to take clean and decarbonize the air, and that's an infinite goal. So
Excellent.
we're definitely on a trajectory.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you. Okay, thanks for listening to Carbon Climates. If you follow us on Instagram at carbon_climates, you can keep up with all our latest news and our newest posts. But yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.